Owning a diner had always been my dream. For nearly a decade, it was my second home, a small, lovely place where locals met for breakfast, travelers paused for a meal, and regulars relaxed over their coffee. I loved the late nights when the rush died down and I could sip a cup of tea while wrapping up the day's paperwork. But on one particular Thursday night, the quiet comfort of my diner turned into something much darker. It was a slow evening. By 8:30 p.m., the dinner rush had trickled out, leaving me, Amy, my server, and Joe, the cook, to clean up and prepare for closing. The smell of grilled burgers still hung in the air, and the jukebox played softly in the corner. Amy wiped down the counters while Joe scrubbed the grill. We laughed about Joe's bad luck in poker last week, sharing stories about our regulars and guessing who might come in the next morning. It was just a regular, uneventful night, until the bell above the door jingled. We all turned to see a man walk in. His appearance immediately caught my attention. His jacket was worn and too big for him, and his jeans were frayed at the cuffs. He looked like he hadn't slept in days. Still, he didn't seem threatening, just tired. "Just coffee," he muttered, sliding into a booth near the window. Amy looked at me, and I nodded for her to serve him. "Sure thing," she said cheerfully, grabbing a pot of coffee and a mug. He waved off the menu, saying he was waiting for a ride. Amy poured the coffee, and he cradled the mug in his hands, staring out the window without drinking a sip. By 10 p.m., he was still there. The coffee remained untouched, and he hadn't moved from his spot. Amy approached him again, her usual friendly demeanor starting to waver. "Sir, do you need anything else? We're getting ready to close." He looked at her briefly, but didn't respond, his gaze returning to the dark parking lot. When 10:30 rolled around, Joe finished up in the kitchen and poked his head out. "You want me to stick around, boss?" he asked, jerking his thumb toward the man. I shook my head. "No, I'll handle it. You and Amy can head out." Amy shot me a concerned look. "Are you sure? He's giving me a weird vibe." I waved her off, trying to stay calm. "It's fine. He's just waiting for someone. He'll leave soon." They both hesitated for a beat before grabbing their things and heading out, leaving me alone with the man. By 11 p.m., my patience was wearing thin. I walked over to his booth, trying to sound firm but not confrontational. "Sir, we're closed now. If your ride isn't here, I can give you directions to a gas station down the road." He didn't look at me. "They'll be here," he said flatly. Something in his tone sent a ripple of unease through me. I flipped the open sign to closed and started locking the doors. That's when his demeanor changed. "You're really gonna shut me out?" he snapped, his voice louder than before. I turned back to him, startled. "I'm sorry, but we're closed. You'll need to wait outside." He stood up abruptly, towering over me. "You think you can take what's mine and get away with it?" My eyes widened, confused. "What are you talking about? You owe me," he shouted, slamming his fists on the table. My heart raced as I backed toward the counter. "Sir, I don't know what you're talking about. You need to leave now, or I'll call the police." "Go ahead," he sneered. "Call them. They won't stop me." With trembling hands, I grabbed my phone and dialed 911. The dispatcher picked up, and I explained the situation as calmly as I could. "He's acting aggressive, and I'm alone in the diner," I whispered, trying not to set him off further. "Stay on the line," the dispatcher said. "Officers are on their way." I stayed on the line with the dispatcher, gripping the phone so tightly my hand ached. "He's still here," I whispered. "He's getting more aggressive." "Stay where you are and keep the door locked," the dispatcher replied calmly. "Officers are en route." I locked myself in the kitchen, my heart beating in my throat as I peeked through the small window in the door. The man was no longer pacing. He had moved toward the counter. For a moment, I thought he might leave, but then I saw him trying to open the cash register. When it didn't budge, his frustration boiled over. "Come on," he shouted, slamming his fists on the counter. He tried prying it open with his bare hands, but the lock held firm. His anger grew. Grabbing a nearby stool, he hurled it across the room, a loud crash making me flinch. Then his gaze shifted toward the kitchen door. My heart froze cold as he stomped over, pounding on the door with both fists. "You can't hide forever," he bellowed. "I'll catch you, and you won't get away." The door rattled with each hit, and I backed away, keeping my eyes on the window. His face was inches from the glass now, his expression twisted with fury. "You'll regret this," he snarled. The dispatcher's voice broke through my panic. "The officers are almost there. Just hold on." My hands trembled, but I stayed quiet, hoping he wouldn't figure out how thin the door really was. Red and blue lights suddenly flashed outside. The man froze, looking over his shoulder. His demeanor changed instantly. He bolted toward the front door, fumbling with the lock to escape. I held my breath as I heard the screech of tires outside. The police arrived just as he stumbled out into the parking lot, trying to make a run for it. Two officers shouted at him to stop, but he didn't listen. One officer tackled him while the other pulled out handcuffs, subduing him quickly. I watched from the kitchen window, relief mixed with exhaustion as I unlocked the door and stepped out to meet the officers. "Are you okay?" the officer asked, concerned. I nodded shakily. "Yeah, just shaken up. Do you know this guy?" he asked, gesturing toward the patrol car where the man sat handcuffed and yelling obscenities. "No," I replied. "He just came in tonight and refused to leave. The officer told me he's been causing trouble in the area. They've had reports of break-ins and aggressive behavior, usually targeting small businesses late at night." "You're lucky this ended without anyone getting hurt," he said. "Lucky." That word stuck with me as I looked around the diner, now eerily quiet, except for the distant chatter of the officers outside. The warm, familiar space I'd poured so much love into felt different now. Darker. Tainted. The next day, I implemented a strict, no lingering policy near closing time. And now the three of us always go out together. No one is alone at night anymore. I'm not going to let something like this happen again. I'm grateful I didn't get hurt, but what happened left a scar. I used to think of late night diners as places of comfort and safety, little bubbles of light in the darkness. Now I know better, and I'll never let my guard down again. I had been working at the diner for about 6 months at that time. I kind of like it, and it's flexible enough to fit around my college classes and pays well enough to keep my old Honda running. But on this particular night, a shift that started like any other turned into one of the scariest nights of my life. The evening rush had died down, and I was settling into the rhythm of the night shift. I was running between tables, refilling coffee mugs and balancing trays of burgers and fries. That's when I noticed him. He was sitting alone in a corner booth, his hands wrapped around a cup of coffee. At first, he seemed like any other late-night customer. Mid-40s, unremarkable, with a baseball cap. But as the night went on, I started to feel his eyes on me. Every time I looked his way, he was staring. At first, I brushed it off. People stare sometimes. It's part of the job. But it wasn't the usual kind of stare. It wasn't the I need a refill stare or even the I'm bored and zoning out stare. It was intense, like he was studying me. When I went to check on him, he smiled, a thin, almost unnatural smile, and started asking questions. "You're a busy guy, huh?" he said. "Yeah, Fridays can get hectic," I replied, trying to sound polite but not overly friendly. "You in school?" he asked, his tone casual but his eyes sharp. "Yeah, I'm a student at the university," I said, immediately regretting the words. I didn't like how personal the conversation was getting. His gaze never left my face. "It must be tough juggling work and school." "Yeah, it keeps me busy," I said, stepping back. "Can I get you anything else?" "No, I'm good," he said, his smile widening. "Just enjoying the view." His words and the way he spoke left me feeling off balance, but I pushed it aside. I had other tables to attend to, and lingering too long felt wrong. By midnight, the diner was nearly empty, and my shift was winding down. The man had left about an hour earlier, and I felt a small sense of relief when I saw his booth empty. I wiped down the tables, cashed out my tips, and clocked out. The parking lot was quiet. I climbed into my Honda, started the engine, and headed home, looking forward to crashing on my couch with a bowl of cereal and some late-night TV. About 10 minutes into the drive, I noticed headlights in my rearview mirror. At first, I didn't think much of it. It's a small town, and it's not unusual for someone to take the same route home. But as I turned onto a quieter road, the car stayed behind me. I turned again, this time onto a side street I don't usually take. The headlights followed. A knot of anxiety began to form in my stomach. I told myself I was imagining things. Maybe they were just heading the same way. But when I made another turn, one that looped back toward the main road, the car followed again. I took a deep breath and made a series of random turns, weaving through the sleepy neighborhood streets. The car stayed with me at every turn, maintaining a steady distance. By now, my pulse was racing. Whoever was driving that car wasn't just heading in the same direction. They were following me. I grabbed my phone and dialed 911, keeping one hand on the wheel. 911, what's your emergency? I think someone's following me, I said. I just left work, and this car has been behind me for the last 15 minutes. They're following every turn I make. Where are you now? The dispatcher asked. I gave her my location, looking nervously at the car in the rearview mirror. Keep driving, she said. Head to the police station. Officers will meet you there. I hit the gas, fear driving me faster as I sped toward the police station. The car behind me didn't back off. In fact, they seemed to close the distance, their headlights glaring in my mirrors. I took another sharp turn, my tires screeching against the asphalt. The car followed, its presence pressing heavily on my nerves. The dispatcher stayed on the line. You're doing great, she said. Just a few more blocks. Finally, I saw the familiar brick building with its bright floodlights and marked patrol cars out front. I felt the weight lift off my shoulders as I pulled into the parking lot. The car behind me slowed as I neared the station, and then, just as I pulled into a parking space, it turned sharply and sped off into the night. I jumped out of my car, my legs shaking as I walked toward the station's entrance. A pair of officers met me at the door. Are you okay? One of them asked. My hands were trembling. Yeah, but they're gone now. They turned off as soon as I got here. The officers took my statement and assured me they'd keep an eye out for the vehicle. They asked for a description, but all I could give them was a vague account of the car. Dark colored, maybe a sedan. Driving home that night was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Every set of headlights behind me felt like a threat, every turn a potential trap. I parked in my driveway, bolted inside, and double-checked every lock on my doors and windows. For weeks after that, the unsettling sensation of being observed clung to me. I started parking closer to the diner entrance, checking my mirrors obsessively on the drive home, and avoiding late shifts whenever I could. Whoever that man was, whatever his intentions, he hadn't just followed me home. He'd shaken my sense of safety to its core. I work as a manager at a diner, and from time to time I work the night shift. Most nights it was peaceful, a chance for regulars to wind down and night owls to grab a bite. For me, it was also a time to organize stocks while keeping an eye on the floor. I liked the quiet that came with managing the place at night. What I didn't like were the prank calls. They started about 3 months ago. At first, it was nothing unusual, someone breathing heavily, laughing, then hanging up. It happened at least once a week, always late at night, when the diner was nearly empty. I ignored it, figuring it was a bored teenager or someone looking to get a reaction. But then the calls became more specific. Are you alone tonight? The voice asked during one call. It wasn't loud or frantic, just calm and steady. Excuse me? I said. The line went dead. I put the receiver down and shook it off, chalking it up to another random prank. But as the weeks went on, the question became routine. Every few nights, the same voice would call, asking the same thing. Are you alone tonight? I started letting the staff answer the phone, but the caller seemed to know when I picked up. He never said anything when anyone else answered, just me. One Friday night, the diner was quieter than usual. There were only two customers, an older couple sharing a milkshake in a booth, and a man sitting alone in the far corner. He'd been there for over an hour, nursing a cup of coffee and barely touching the slice of pie in front of him. Something about him felt off. He wasn't doing anything particularly strange, but his presence made me uncomfortable. Then the phone rang. I hesitated before picking it up. Main Street Diner, how can I help you? Are you alone tonight? The voice said, calm as ever. A shiver ran through me. I scanned the room as I answered, "Who is this?" The caller chuckled softly. "Look to your left," he said. My heart skipped a beat. Slowly, I turned my head toward the corner where the man was sitting. He was staring right at me, a thin smile spreading across his face. I stood still, gripping the phone. "Who are you?" I asked. The line went dead. The man's smile didn't falter. He didn't wave or say anything, just kept smiling. I hung up the phone and tried to compose myself. Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe he wasn't the caller at all. But the pit in my stomach told me otherwise. I walked over to the counter, pretending to check the coffee pot while looking at him from the corner of my eye. He was still staring. "Jess, you okay?" Brenda, one of my waitresses, asked as she came out of the kitchen. I didn't want to alarm her. "Yeah, just a weird call. Can you keep an eye on table 6 for me?" Brenda looked at the man and raised an eyebrow. "Sure. What's up with him?" "Nothing. Just let me know if he leaves." She gave me a suspicious look, but nodded and went back to wiping down the counter. The man eventually got up and walked toward the restroom. I felt a flicker of relief, hoping he was finally leaving. But when he passed by me, he stopped for a moment. "You should answer your phone," he said, his voice low. I didn't respond. I watched as he disappeared into the bathroom. Minutes later, the phone rang again. "Main Street Diner," I said, my voice trembling slightly. "You didn't ask if I'm still here," the voice said. I slammed the receiver down. "Brenda," I said, my voice firmer now. "Call the police. Tell them we have a suspicious person here." "What's going on?" she asked, her eyes wide. "Just do it," I said, my tone leaving no room for argument. While Brenda called the police, I stayed by the counter, my eyes fixed on the bathroom door. Tense, expecting the man to burst out at any moment, but the door remained eerily still. About 5 minutes later, two officers walked in. Their presence was hard to explain, both reassuring and nerve-wracking. Brenda hung up the phone and quickly explained the situation, gesturing toward the bathroom. One of the officers positioned himself near the door while the other called out, "Sir, we need you to come out." There was a pause, followed by the sound of shuffling inside. Slowly, the door creaked open and the man stepped out. His demeanor was unsettlingly calm. Without a word, he allowed the officers to escort him to the sidewalk. I stood frozen behind the counter as they asked him a series of questions. "Do you have any ID?" one officer asked. The man shook his head. "Do you have a phone on you?" He patted his pockets theatrically before spreading his hands. "Nope." The officers searched him but found nothing. No phone, no wallet, nothing that might explain who he was or why he was there. After a few minutes, they let him go with a warning to stay away from the diner. As he walked off into the night, he looked back, his expression unreadable. A shiver ran through me, but I forced myself to focus on the officers as they approached to take my statement. "Without any identification or evidence of a crime, there's not much we can do," one of them said apologetically. "If he comes back, give us a call right away." It wasn't exactly comforting, but I thanked them before locking up for the night. The next morning, as I pulled into the diner's parking lot, something black caught my eye near the bathroom window. At first, I thought it was just trash, but as I got closer, I realized it was a cell phone. Cheap looking, with a cracked screen. Next to it was a pair of wireless headphones, scratched and scuffed like they'd been dropped in a hurry. Then it hit me. The man must have tossed his phone and headphones out the window before the police arrived, hoping to hide them. I picked up the items gingerly, wrapping them in a tissue before heading inside. Later that day, I handed the phone and headphones over to the police. They confirmed it was a burner phone, likely untraceable. The headphones were equally unhelpful. No distinguishing marks, no serial numbers, just another dead end. Weeks after, I still found myself dwelling on what happened that night. Every time the phone rang late at night, I braced myself, expecting to hear his voice. Whoever that man was, he knew how to get under my skin. And while he never came back, at least not that I know of, the memory of his voice still haunts me. I don't deal with phone calls anymore. The staff is now in charge of it. Sometimes it's not the loud threats or obvious dangers you have to worry about. It's the quiet, unsettling moments that stay with you long after they're over. It was just another late-night shift at Lou's Diner, the kind I'd worked countless times before. Our place wasn't flashy, a slightly worn-down spot on the edge of town where regulars nursed coffee and pie and truckers pulled in for midnight burgers. By the time the clock hit midnight, the last customer had wandered out and my closing routine was underway. I liked the quiet of closing up. The sounds of the night, refrigerators droning, fluorescent lights snapping, the rare car passing outside, had a way of grounding me after a long shift. That night, everything seemed normal. I wiped down the counter and the tables, swept the room, locked the cash register, and flipped through the end-of-day checklist on my clipboard. Locking up was second nature by now. So I headed toward the bathrooms to wrap up for the night. As I approached the back hallway, the faintest rustling sound caught my attention. It was soft, like fabric brushing against tile. The men's room door was slightly ajar. That was strange. I clearly remembered closing it earlier when I was sweeping the hallway. "Hello?" I called out, stepping closer. My voice echoed down the tiled hallway, but there was no response. The sound came again, but now it wasn't just rustling, it was muttering. Low, garbled words I couldn't quite make out. I hesitated. Maybe someone had sneaked in before I locked the front doors. That wasn't uncommon. People sometimes wandered in off the street, looking for a warm place to sleep. Still, something about this felt different. With a deep breath for courage, I pushed the door open. The restroom was empty, except for one closed stall at the far end. "Hey, the diner's closed. You can't be in here." The muttering died down. For a moment, there was only an eerie silence. I stepped closer. "Sir, do you need help?" Suddenly, the stall door rattled violently, as though someone had thrown their full weight against it. I stumbled back. My heart felt like it was about to leap out of my chest. "Leave me alone," a man's voice growled. "I can't let them find me." The voice was raw, almost desperate. My stomach knotted as I realized this wasn't just someone looking for a place to crash. "Sir, the diner is closed," I said again, doing my best to keep my voice calm. "If you need help, I can call someone for you." The door rattled again, harder. The man started shouting, angry, incoherent words mixed with frantic muttering. I backed out of the restroom. Whatever was going on, I didn't want to stick around to find out. I reached into my pocket, grabbed the bathroom key. With a quick look inside to make sure the man wasn't coming out, I slammed the door shut and locked it from the outside. Once I was sure the door was secure, I sprinted back to the counter and grabbed my phone. My fingers fumbled as I dialed 911. "This is Chris, the manager at Lou's Diner. I've got a guy locked in our bathroom. He's acting aggressive and refusing to leave." The dispatcher's calm voice assured me officers were on their way and instructed me to stay at a safe distance. Those 10 minutes felt like forever. Every so often, I'd hear the man inside, muttering and occasionally slamming against the stall door. His voice alternated between anger and fear, like he was arguing with someone I couldn't see. I stayed by the counter, my eyes darting between the bathroom and the front door. My imagination ran wild. What if he broke down the door? What if he had a weapon? The diner felt less like my safe, familiar workplace and more like a trap. When I finally heard the sound of police sirens, I don't think I've ever been so relieved in my life. Two officers stepped inside, their presence immediately easing the tension. "Where is he?" one of them asked. I pointed toward the back hallway. "He's locked in the men's room. He's been shouting and acting erratically." The officer's expression was serious. I handed them the bathroom key. I didn't want to be around when the man left the stall. They entered the bathroom and approached the stall door cautiously, one drawing his baton while the other knocked. "Sir, this is the police. We need you to step out of the stall with your hands where we can see them." For a moment, there was silence. Then, the muttering started again, louder this time. The officer repeated his command, his tone firm. Finally, the stall door creaked open and the man stepped out. He was a mess, wild eyes and clothes that hadn't seen a wash in ages. "They're after me," he shouted, pointing a trembling finger at the officers. "They're everywhere." The officers shot each other a look, their expressions carefully neutral, before one gently guided the man out of the restroom. "Let's get you somewhere safe," he said. Once the man was in the patrol car, one of the officers stayed behind to take my statement. "Do you know this guy?" he asked. "Never seen him before. He kept saying someone was after him." The officer nodded. "Sounds like he might be mentally ill. We'll get him the help he needs." The explanation made sense, but it didn't bring much comfort. The man's wild eyes, the way he seemed so desperate yet threatening, stayed with me long after he was escorted out. That night, I skipped the rest of my usual closing routine. I locked up in record time and drove home. It wasn't fear that hit me the hardest. It was the realization of how vulnerable I had been without even realizing it. The next morning, I called the owner and strongly suggested adding better security measures. Locks for the bathroom doors during off hours, brighter exterior lights, and maybe even some cameras around the building. The owner listened, and within a week, the changes were in place. They helped a little, but the uneasy feeling didn't go away completely. I still work the night shift, but I'm not as relaxed as I used to be. I keep my phone in my pocket at all times, double-check the locks before everyone leaves, and I never walk into any part of the diner without announcing myself first. It's not fear exactly, it's caution, the kind that creeps in after you've seen how quickly a normal night can take a wrong turn. I don't know who or what that man thought he was hiding from. Maybe it was all in his head, or maybe he was running from something real. Either way, he left me with an unsettling truth that even the most familiar places don't always mean safe places. If these diner nightmares kept you hooked, hit that like button and subscribe for more creepy stories. What would you have done in these situations? Drop your thoughts in the comments. I'm dying to hear your survival tips. Share this with your fellow night owls, but maybe warn them to keep an eye on the bathroom next time. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.